You're ready.
Ready? Okay, I'm going to reconvene our meeting, and Mr. Morgan has agreed to give us our invocation for this afternoon.
Please pray with me. Our dear most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for the food that we have received, and bless it to the nourishment of our bodies. Please help us to do your work and discern the things for Howard College that you see for us, and be with us in those tasks. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Yes?
We have a lot today. You will do them, I guess, maybe as they present.
Okay.
Would that be all right?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
This time the board will hear comments and questions from individuals who have not requested a specific place on the agenda. And I don't see anyone. Okay, let's move on to our routine matters. You've all had a chance to read those and go through them. Do you have any comments or questions or anything else to do with those? If not, I need a motion to approve those. Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Unfinished business. New business, visiting, and future directions. May 7th election.
All right. Mr. Chairman, board members, as you know, we have Precinct 1, Precinct 2, and an at-large position that are up for election this May. And we only had one individual file for each of those places. Mr. Flores determined that he was not going to run again after all these years of service, and we'll talk about that some more as we get to the end of his term, but he did make the determination not to file. But we did have in his place, Raul Marquez Jr. did submit his paperwork, as did for Precinct 2, Mark Morgan, decided to run again. And then Marisha Beck in the at-large position, which she was appointed to back in September, which was the completion. She will be completing the 4 years of Patricia Bennett's term, and then would be up for election again to keep the cycle going. So as a result of that, since you did not have anyone file to create an election need, then you can do certification of unopposed candidates. So that would be the first process that you will need to go through, and you need to approve that.
Do I have a motion to approve the certification? Have a motion, have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Adrian, are you back on the phone?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You'll need to sign that.
Okay.
When you get back. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. All right. And then, Mr. Chairman, as a result of that, with no opposed candidates, then you now can cancel the election.
Okay. Do I have a motion to cancel the election? Have a motion. Have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
I
suppose. Motion carries. Cancel the second. All right. President's contract and job description. I think we've all had a chance to go through that. So, any discussion? Do we need to? I need a motion to approve her contract.
I move we approve the president's contract.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Suppose. Uh-oh, you're on the hook again.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. COVID-19 response status number 22.
All right. Again, we talk about it every time. It's unbelievable that we're in 22, but we are. And so we said we would do from the very beginning when we moved into altered operations, we would do a report for you on a monthly basis, and so this is 22. We do not go through the entire document. It's getting quite thick. There's a lot that has happened over the last 22, essentially, months, a little more than that. But we do try to just hit the high points. And so, as always, we're continuing to do legislative outreach by mail, phone, electronically, virtually, and socially distanced. We have all funds have been awarded by February 17, 2022 in our student funds as far as the CARES Act, and want to thank Brenda and her team for all the work, Candace Draper. They've all worked very hard to get those funds that were available for students allocated out. There's lots of work that has gone into that. You know, I skipped over one of the first things, and that is what has happened with our, as far as our cases in the area. And as we know, last month we were seeing a lot of the Omicron impact. Everything has really gone down. We had a lot of activity as far as on our campuses, but it has really settled down. And I want to thank Rhonda again for all of her activity over the last 2 years, and also Fabian has been involved in that. Everybody, we've had several people, my chemister, Shannon over at SWID, Christy on the Big Spring campus, a lot of people involved in that, but Rhonda has kept up with the spreadsheet. I know Fabian has helped with that too. We appreciate all that, but we seem to be at a settled down stage right now. So we'll hope that continues. Moving on, we did, as a result of things settling down, our task force, we talked about, do we go back to our regular class schedule, course delivery methods, and so we did so. Remember, we had a plan that we were going to do that for a couple of weeks. We had a different approach, and so on. January the 31st, we went back, and we're still in amber status. We had just been in high alert with our amber status, really thought we might have to go over into red, but we didn't. We stayed in high alert amber, and we continue to be in amber at this point. As far as other things, we still, as far as the way we're delivering instructionally, we're trying to use the spaces, the larger spaces that we have. That's impacting some of the spaces that we can rent. For example, in San Angelo, our Kevin J. Berry, we are not renting that out, the rapid response room, because we're using it for classroom space. Vaccinations, that has been a big deal. We know that there was a lot of activity about that at the Supreme Court and what was going to happen relative to vaccinations, but we know that there were some basic, I guess you'd say, concessions that the health field needed to have those vaccinations. And so we, as far as our nursing students, they've either been vaccinated or they have had exemptions filed and approved by the clinical facilities. And that, again, is we are replying to what those facilities are being required to do relative to federal mandates. We don't require it. The nursing program doesn't require it, but the clinical sites do, and so we're following that so the students can do what they need to do. All right. I had these dog-eared, but it just takes me time to get over there. Okay. Again, the CARES money, it's been a great opportunity for us, but it does require a lot of time and effort. And as I've already thanked our financial people multiple times, I continue to want to do that because it has really created a lot of additional time and effort. We do have our ARPA, I think that's the way you say it, HERF funds, the American Rescue Plan Act, that we received back in May of 2021. We're still determining how we're going to use that. The total COVID federal and state grants awarded to students has been right at right at $5 million, 4.95, and all eligible students who submitted an application were awarded. And so that, again, as I mentioned, that particular grant, it's closed, hallelujah. I was kidding, Brenda, there's some other funds that are available, and she was going to watch one of the webinars on it, and I said, I don't think we're going to go down that path. And I said, you know, I'm afraid if we do that I might see you run into the hills. And so they've all had a big time with that because all the other people were going to follow her. So those funds have been great, but it has been a lot of time and effort. We had one additional request for a faculty accommodation during the spring relative to the COVID pandemic. We're still working with students as far as those that live in the residence halls. They're able to request their food, go or dine, in, depending on the scenario that we have relative to infection. We still are outside visitors. No outside visitors are allowed in the dorms. We continue to review any kind of new guidelines that come out, and I know everybody's probably seen the latest information relative to the CDC guidelines relative to masking. So that it seems that they're letting up a little bit on their recommendations relative to masking in low transmission areas. Really, it's moving into mainly immunocompromised people needing to wear masking. So we're seeing some changes there. Again, we just try to respond to what is going on at the federal and state level. As far as donors, we still have people that are interested in helping along the way. Not something since last month, but we still occasionally will have people that want to do something. We're updating plans as necessary. It's shared multiple times. The prison, we're still working with the prison. We have a meeting with the new warden on Wednesday, and we are there beginning to try to do more in the prison, and we're working to try to do what we can to deliver instruction. And so we'll find out more on Wednesday what they're going to be ready to do. Okay. Finally, we will have some more clinics this spring as there's interest as far as the vaccination clinics are for first or booster or whatever. And we are working on decisions and plans relative to the awards convocations and graduation. So there we go. Again, we'll continue to see what our state will do relative to the pandemic and the federal government and try to keep abreast of it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Open Higher College update. That, so we'll move on to the big thing
as we begin the section for the agenda.
Yes, sir. And if you will let us, we're just going to run through some of this. We're going to try to make it go quickly. But we have several initiatives that we'd like to share. Amy and group have been working on some of these things. And Amy, do you want to lead this off, or do you want me to just have the individuals do it? How do you want to do it?
I think the team's ready.
Okay.
They were so anxious to be here today, and they had to fight over who got to be about to present. So,
all right.
Is nursing first on the?
They are. She is. And so also, as Lucy's coming forward, I would just make everyone aware this is part of, everybody remembers the summit that we had back in December. And Howard College's plan of action, we're trying to come back and address some of the things that came up in the summit, and you'll continue to see that in the months ahead. So Lucy's going to tell us about our Texas Tech partnership.
This fall, we started working on it last spring, but this fall we completed an articulation agreement with Texas Tech University for RN graduates from Howard College to be able to attain their BSN online, and through that articulation agreement, Howard College graduates will be able to transfer 90 hours upon graduation, plus 30 additional hours. Our ADN degree is 60 hours, and then they're able to do 30 additional hours here at Howard College. And then Texas Tech accepts 90 of those hours towards their 120-hour degree plan. And so that's what we have signed and in place. Also, a part of that agreement is that the students are able to apply for RNBSN upon enrollment in our program if they meet the certain criteria, and so they can dually enroll and take some of those co-requisites, the extra hours, while they're in nursing school. If not, they have up to 1 year to complete those with automatic admission as long as they pass board and they have graduated. So it will. The big thing is that it gives opportunity for students in the community to have 90 hours here locally and then do the last year online. And so that is something we have recently done. And if you go to the Howard College webpage, you can see information, but also on Texas Tech, there's a whole portion set aside for Howard College and the agreement.
And I failed to say Lucy Gaypart. I think everybody knows I just called her Lucy, but.
Thank you.
Do you think that that's going to increase the number of students in our program? Do you think they're going to use that as a cheaper way getting 90 hours of tech?
I don't know that it will. We can't really increase the number of students because of, like, the O-N ratios. But what I think it can help is attract students. And for students also who have graduated from Howard College in the past, it's for graduates as well. And so they do not have to be somebody currently enrolled or fixing to enroll. And so Texas Tech will accept graduates in the past. And so I think what it's going to do is help enhance educational opportunities for graduates. I hope that it does draw. I have just started working on some of that information being disseminated to the local high schools. So students may not have the ability to go to Texas Tech to obtain their BSN. They can start here and still have that goal of graduating. As far as I do hope that it helps attract students, we will not be able to increase enrollment unless part of the situation with that in particular. But we do hope that it does help draw more students to the area and help draw other students who graduated to come back to Howard College to take those 30 hours that can transfer at the general end.
I don't know if y'all.
I think it'll definitely help general studies with those enrollments as well, and it is 100% online, so they're able to maintain employment and work wherever they are as graduates.
Yes, I want a program. My granddaughter is graduating in May.
Yes, I knew that. Yes, very excited. And I have a few others who have graduated and have done that. And then part of it's called a declaration of intent. And so I recently, they did a little skills fair or something last week, and I see those come across. And that's for both campuses are able to use this opportunity.
He's real excited about it.
Any other questions?
Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Lucy. All right, then our Vet Tech program, we had mentioned that we had submitted a grant and back in the fall, and we were waiting for the final dispensation that it all worked out. And so we have two individuals here, Evan Hoffelmeyer, our assistant professor, and Kelby Weiss, who is the Ag Program and Broughton Complex Coordinator and CTE Division Director. I think that Evan is... Are you the one presenting, or Kelby? You're going to do a team tag? All right. Okay, that'll work.
Well, for y'all that don't know myself, you know, typically isolated up the hill at the Ag Building most of the time, so I don't get around too much. I'm Evan Hafelmeyer. I'm a livestock nutrition coach and assistant professor of Ag, and also the grant director for our Vet Tech program that we're hoping to get started and get off the ground here pretty soon. You know, I'll go back and kind of talk about the history of it. Back in 2019, when Kelby and I both started here, we were looking for ways to just improve opportunities for kids in the ag realm. What else could they do? What other certificates could they have opportunities? And it seems like overwhelmingly when we went and visited high schools to go recruit kids, Vet Tech came up quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it popped up tremendously. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that any of y'all are familiar with the events that FFA puts on during the spring. They have lots of different career development events, what they call them. And Vet Tech is one of their biggest events. They'll have thousands of kids in lots of those area contests and state contests. So I think that was a big push for that. So then we had to kind of sit back and think on it. You know, is this a need? And we kind of got off track a little bit due to COVID and came back in fall of 2020 and then also 2021 to really sit down. Janae Higgins was a big part of helping us get this grant, and as well as you, Lindsay, back there. And so we got started about fall of 2020 and then really started pursuing it spring of 2021. Was able to get the award this fall last 2021.
So just to compound on what he's saying, we put together this short presentation for you guys. We definitely know, you know, where we are in Texas is kind of isolated compared to the rest of the state. And so where we looked at Vet Tech programs and what was accredited, we were really shocked to find that there was only 12 accredited programs in the state. And the majority of those are all along the I-35 corridor. The only other one is in El Paso. And so we really knew that this was going to be a need. You know, we definitely think after discussing, you know, we sent out quite a few surveys. We called, emailed, texted different people around the area of vet clinics, and we found overwhelmingly that they needed somebody that was very well trained and that could step into the role of a licensed vet tech immediately. They said it's just a massive need, and we have no idea how we're going to fill this need. And it seemed like West Texas was in more of a need than even the rest of the state. So we surveyed, we asked them, you know, what would you want, what would you need? And in that questionnaire, too, we also asked how much of a pay increase is there going to be. Because obviously, as a student, if there's no reason for you to go, you know, you need to make some extra money. And so we found that most of the medium to large-size clinics would pay $5 to $7 more per hour with a licensed vet tech over just one that they trained in-house. And so we thought that was significant enough to make a difference. So typically, most vet techs around here, they're unlicensed and have been trained in-house or getting paid anywhere from $9 to $12 an hour, depending on experience. And so most of these guys said that they pay $15 to $17. We've heard some of them say that they pay $20 an hour for a licensed vet tech. So we were really shocked and really impressed with that. And so, you know, I put together, I found this map through the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it's really shocking to see where our service area is and how much that there's not available in licensed vet techs. And the U.S. Bureau of Labor estimates that the growth over the next 10 years is going to be 15%, and so already that's beating the average that the U.S. Bureau of Labor likes to see. And so we knew that this was a good opportunity. So like Evan said, you know, we sat down and we discussed. We tried to bounce ideas off of how to find the funding, and it kept coming back to a grant. You know, we just thought that was really the best way to go about it. And so we had actually applied for an HSI grant, and we found out that we, based on what Brian told us, that we couldn't do an HSI grant for some reason. That's Brian. We play Brian for that. and so we also applied for another NEFA, which is the National Institute of Food and Ag grant, and we were denied that grant, correct? That first one? Yeah, we were denied the first one. And they said it didn't really fall within the means of what they were wanting. And so then we you know, it definitely was a little disheartening having this grand idea in your head and then it gets kicked back. And so we stepped back, and then we found this other one that was in agricultural workforce training. Obviously, that lines up exactly with what we're needing. And so we pushed. Janae, with her help, we got the grant written. We got everything turned in. And then we found out that we got it, and we were super excited. Not shocked, but we were excited, you know. And so the grant that we wrote was $450,000 over a four-year term. And of that grant, 25% pays for the project director, which you're looking at the project director, the program chair, which we have yet to hire, adjunct faculty, accreditation fees, travel for the accreditation team and for, you know, the faculty members, equipment and supplies, and waste management. And so we knew that, you know, obviously the largest cost is going to be the paying the faculty, but we also want to make sure that there was student support. And so we decided as a collective unit that we wanted to offer scholarships. And so inside that grant, we wrote in 16 scholarships of $4,500, of up to $4,500 based on need. And so that's over the 4 years. There's 16 scholarships available, and we're hoping that maybe we can continue on that with other grants in the future to help support more students. And also, every student that comes to the program will receive a $1,200 technology scholarship to purchase an iPad and a mobile ECG or EKG unit. So we thought that was kind of out-of-the-box thinking. We thought it was going to be really good. And from what we could tell, the people that actually read the grant and granted the grant, they were really shocked and really impressed that we had that written. So do you have anything else to add to the grant part?
Not to the grant part. As far as our breakdown goes, pretty well covered it. The timeline, you know, right now we're looking for a program chair. We've been reaching out to other junior colleges that have the same programs right now, which as Kelby alluded, they're all East 35, so McLennan Community College, Weatherford College is getting theirs off the ground, Palo Alto College or Alamo College. And so trying to reach out there, and that's our biggest pickup right now, is trying to find a program chair. And once we can do that, we can really start rolling on this.
And so we're trying to think outside the box as well, because the AVMA, the American Vet Medical Association, they require you to have a licensed vet tech or a DVM. And so we're really hoping, you know, we may have to think outside the box being where we are, because we don't just have licensed vet techs beating down our doors, because there's none out here. And the other important thing that we ran across during this is that every licensed vet tech was in their practice for more than 20 years. The turnover rate was extremely low, whereas the turnover rate for the non-licensed vet techs is anywhere from 9 to 12 months to 2 years. And so we thought that was very interesting, that the people that actually sit down and did the work like to stick around in their profession. So with that, our cohort class size, we're looking at 8, just because we're kind of stuck with AVMA accreditation criteria. If you have live animals, you have to have an 8-to-1 student to faculty ratio. And so that's definitely going to limit the class size in the beginning. And we're hoping to increase the cohort size as we move forward with this program. In the classroom setting, you can have 12-to-1. So there's a little bit more flexibility there. But if animals are present, you have to have 8-to-1. The other important thing, AVMA only does 10 site visits a year. And to earn accreditation, they have to come to your site and do a site visit. And so we have got to make sure that we get in really quick and get on that schedule so that we can make this happen.
I will say one thing that, and it's kind of relevant, when we were doing the surveys, we figured out or found out that a lot of vet clinics are becoming corporately owned. And I think with vet clinics going that way, I think it is important that we have licensed vet techs. They're going to look at that versus, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, you know, somebody coming off the street and going into a vet clinic. You know, they're probably less likely to hire them without any accreditation. So I do think this is something that is needed, and we've already had students from Big Spring High School, Tahoma, Sands, Midland, you know, calling and asking. So
I can count about 20 that we've already had interest in the program. And we're not even anywhere close to kicking it off yet. So there's a lot of desire around the area for it.
We appreciate what y'all did.
That's exciting.
Getting it together. And we've had to be quiet. I know we mentioned it to you that we'd submitted it, but we've known for a bit that we were awarded the grant, but they embargoed the press release until we were able to get farther down the road. So it's exciting to be able to announce we're ready to go.
And Janae and Dee were also a big help in this, so they were very instrumental.
Y'all doing a great job. Appreciate it.
It's great to be able to pick up another niche program that will bring students, will be another reason for people to come to Howard College, that because nobody else is doing it around here. So it's a perfect system. And hopefully you can ramp it up to an 8 within a reasonable time whenever you can.
That's the plan. So.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
All right. Next is Amy's going to do the upper band.
We have submitted a grant proposal for an upward bound grant in January. We submitted that. Upward bound, if you're not aware, it's part of the TRIO, the federal TRIO programs. It's one of the grant areas. And the TRIOs are for its outreach and student services. It's their focus. But with the upward bound specifically, it's designed to help students from disadvantaged backgrounds, low-income families or first-generation college students. So that's what we're going to focus on. And this grant it's just for the Big Spring campus, and we're partnering with Big Spring High School. You select one high school, or you can do more than one. But we're starting out with Big Spring High School and may grow after the first year. So, and I believe you do have this in your handout, but the project will provide comprehensive and intensive services for approximately 60 students the first year. And the things that we will be doing, we will hire a project director. That may not be the title, I can't remember. But we will hire someone to oversee this, and they will work directly with the high school. They will begin, they'll probably have an office at the high school in addition to Howard College. But we're looking at like academic tutoring in the core areas to get them ready for college. And that's the whole goal of this, is to start with even eighth grade freshman years and get them so they are ready when they graduate high school for college and then. So academic tutoring, academic instruction, and this is focusing on the high-level math, the sciences, your college-level Englishes, foreign language areas, academic personal and career advising, enrichment activities to get them prepared for standardized exams, application process, financial aid, all the literacy, get them ready so they will be self-sufficient, career exploration. Mentoring and service learning will be part of it. They will have visits to other colleges. Overnight trips is kind of a plus that we put in there to, it's always exciting to take trips. And the parent workshops, that is also a big part of the Upward Bound program, is to target families, because oftentimes these students are not aware of opportunity, and just their parents may not have had that experience. And the objectives of our grant, it's a five-year grant, I probably didn't say that, and again, this is my first time to be directly involved with an Upward Bound program, but from what I've read and learned, we can grow the numbers over the years, but you try to reach targets, or meet your goals, and then you can add more students if that comes along. So we're going to, after 5 years, we want to improve the grade point averages, the standardized test scores, retention and graduation rates. We want more of the students to go into rigorous programs of study. Obviously, we want them to complete post-secondary enrollment and then complete the college degree as well. The request for this first year is $287,537. That's approximately $4,700 per student that we will spend on the 60 students. So we're excited. We won't hear until July, approximately July, August, in that area. But once you get an upward, why don't you get one of these TRIO programs? That's what I really want, is they keep you and then you can do more with it. It's like you prove yourself that you can be successful at the first grant they give you, then you just tend to be able to get them in for future years. So we're excited. I mean, I'll be excited if you get it. I don't know yet. But any questions?
I remember this program we had back in the 70s, and it started coming out here. Helpful because at the time some of the concerts, so many times came over to our church and discussed some of the students about the opportunities to be able to go to college. Because at the time, maybe some of the students didn't know how to go about going, how to apply for financial aid.
partnership at the time up over program here with Western State and Canyon. Some of them were like on the trips, like you mentioned earlier, they took trips to Canyon to get an idea of making down there. We just want to get a director from there because of that program.
No, Bertina, is there like a cohort of students working with the director, and they have a coach, and that's part of the program, so they will be close and have a support of each other. And so I hope that we hear some, I hope I can come back up and say in July, we're here we go. So, the question. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And then the
Bam
next.
Biz Hub.
Yeah. And Dee is going to present this. Dee Lindsay.
Hi, I'm Dee Lindsay. I'm the Dean of Workforce Development. A few months ago, we got contacted by a nonprofit organization called Bandit in the Midland area. And they're a small business development nonprofit that comes and they work with students on how to become entrepreneurs. And so they wanted to contract with Howard College to provide training where they could come on site and provide entrepreneurship programs to students to get them able to go on and make their own business. So we entered into a contract with them, a workforce training agreement, probably about a month ago, and they're going to start doing classes in March. And there's 22 classes that they're going to provide. Four of them are going to be face-to-face, and the rest are going to be online. They plan to have between 10 to 12 students taking these classes. One of the guides for this was that whenever we met with the Economic Development Corporation, Mark Willis had talked about wanting to start a small business incubator. Well, after talking to BAM Biz Hub, they are a small business accelerator. So students that take their classes that want to start their own business, they learn from the ground up, and then BAM Biz Hub also works with them to develop their product line, their company, or whatever they have to do. So they actually walk alongside of them, and within 3 months, they should be able to start their own business. So we're excited that they're going to be offering classes to our community and our students that will be coming from the community to take their courses. And their courses range from ground all the way to marketing and so on. So if they have problems eventually, you know, marketing something or a question later on, BAM Biz Hub will be alongside of them their whole way. We're excited to be offering contracts with them. We on our side are actually going to be getting the contact cards for them, and then they're providing all the training.
I might just point out, too, hope you're picking up as we go through the agenda this afternoon, that we are, as far as our vision and mission and values that we talked about last year and you all affirmed over the summer, this is all part of the community and workforce development area that we're working on, and then it relates to how we're working with our communities, as I brought up the fact of the summit, and we're trying to, again, line back with what some of the things that were being said at the summit. And when we move to the San Angelo one in just a minute, we are working with the Chamber of Commerce and the EDC efforts down there to try to do similar things. So as Dee mentioned, Mark Willis, this was something that Mark felt was a good approach. And so we're trying to find ways that we can align better with our partners in Howard County and Tom Green and Dawson so that we can help our communities and our most importantly, our students and their families reach their dreams. So thank you, Dee.
Thank you.
Last three presentations, and that's that we are, in a sense, going after all kinds of new things out there. They may be small numbers of students to start with, like you're throwing every, we're throwing every possibility out there to try to grow the whole picture. And I think that's great because we saw with COVID, you know, our traditional student body isn't really growing a whole lot. This is a way of maybe 61 programs, 8 and 12, but it's pulling more people. The reputation gets there, we have these programs.
Yes, sir.
You know, it builds.
That's right. Yes, sir. That is our approach. It's like we're trying to pay attention. In a moment, Brian will be sharing some of the things relative to the MC study. We're trying to look at what is going on in our catchment area as far as what the needs are, and trying to assure that we are coming up with something to help the area. Okay, that's everything on the Leadership Summit Big Spring area.
All right, our next item is approving a resolution.
And we're passing on that.
Passing on that.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then nothing for La Mesa, San Angelo, Chamber of Commerce, Economic Development, Edwards.
Yes, sir. And so, again, as I mentioned, this continues to relate to what we're doing with our mission and vision. And Pam, where is Pam? There's Pam. Is going to present. Now, I will tell you that actually we have several others, just like we wanted to have some of the others in San Angelo that were involved in getting this together to be here today. But we're actually hosting Odessa College, wanted to come to our campus and look at what we're doing in some of our CTE areas. So Pam is the one that's going to lead the conversation. Thank you.
Well, it's so nice to be in person and on the phone for a change. Yes, Dr. Sparks is correct. I am the spokesperson, but we have some wonderful people on the San Angelo campus who have been working on all these initiatives. We had a little restructure, and we have a Dean of Workforce Development, Nicole Stevens. I hope you'll get to meet her sometime, and she's done amazing things, as has our Dean of Instruction, Lana Hubbard. So some of the things that are going on in this next month that we're very excited about, Nicole, through her leadership, they're extending and expanding our continuing education offerings. And they've realized from input from the community that we need short-term training, get people trained, get them out into the workforce. So some of the things that they're doing, and it's starting very soon, we have an ASL partnership. This is American Sign Language. We're offering these courses through our CE department. They're 8-week courses. They're from beginner to intermediate, and also offering workplace ASL. We previously offered courses, but we are really expanding it now, so we're excited about that. Also in CE, we have started an initiative with the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts. It's an artisan program. We are excited about it because it's the first step in probably a long journey to form a partnership with the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts for a school to teach the lost trades, saddle making and spur making and just so much that we're really excited about, and it's going to take a while, but we started the first step, and we just, we're offering right now ceramics classes. We've had two, we have another more that have started this in February, and we had a ribbon cutting at the Museum of Fine Arts for the Clay Studio, and Howard College was mentioned several times about what a great partner we are and everything that we're doing to make this program happen. So we're very excited about it. And also in CE, and we are so excited about this one, and Nicole has worked very hard to make this happen, the electrical certificate. We're starting it's a partnership with IBEW, the union, to offer an electrical certificate through our CE department. It's a year-long program, and it's going to teach the skills toward the journeyman pathway. And our first classes start March 21st, and if you're on the campus anytime, we would love to show you the area. We've remodeled the area for the electrical, and we're ready to go. So those three are in our continuing education, and there's more coming. Those three are starting very soon. And in our credit side,
We are very excited about a partnership with ASU, an engineering co-enrollment program. Dr. Sparks will be in San Angelo tomorrow. We are going to have an MOU signing. Dr. Sparks and President Hawkins will sign, and it's very exciting. It's a program that is going to help our Howard College students go right into the engineering program at ASU. So we'll be telling more about that in the future, but that's a great opportunity for our students. Short and sweet, but a lot going on.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am. It sounds wonderful. Great. Thank you.
I hope y'all are picking up on to how we're trying to, all the partnering that we're doing. We're trying to work with our universities. We've always said that we want to be a broker of higher ed. It's a little different in our San Angelo community because ASU is right there, and we can work closely with ASU to deliver advanced degrees past what we can offer on our campus. In Howard County and in Dawson County, we have to be, again, more of a broker. And so we're trying to connect up with our universities so that we can provide what we can in the rural areas that we live in. At the same time, as we partner up with our universities, then we can help people that may be place-bound to get an opportunity at a bachelor's degree. So we're working to try to make those happen.
Okay, thank you. That's very good. Okay, SWID, Battery Council Membership.
Okay, as you all know, our SWID campus, the Southwest College for the Deaf, we have an advisory council. This is something that we've had in place for many years. And you have in front of you, these are the names that we have for this year. Actually, the two new ones are Danny. Where's Danny? There you are. Marla Martinez and Gina are the new ones. Gina D'Amore.
Correct.
And these came with a lot of support from the deaf community, and actually some names that came from the council last year. So,
can I say a little bit about these two?
You sure can.
We're really excited about these two young ladies joining us. They're both graduates of SWID, and Gina is the president and CEO of a small company, which is called MAIG, Mid-Atlantic Interpreting Group. You can look it up online. And so she's out of the Washington, D.C. area, a graduate of SWID. And then Marla Martinez is deaf and hard of hearing access specialist in McAllen. So both of these ladies have been involved with our alumni association over the years, have continued to be interested in SWID, so we're really excited about them joining us.
Thanks for adding that, Danny.
Great. All right. Okay.
We need an approval.
I'm going to need a motion to approve these new council members or the council members in the whole. Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Summer dual credit session.
All right. Danny, do you want to say anything about that?
We received some grant money. Thank you, Julie, for working on that. And so we are starting up a new pilot offering this summer, some dual credit offering. We're hoping that we're going to get some deaf students who haven't had the opportunity for dual credit to be able to come and take a dual credit class from us. We're starting off with just one class this summer and see how that goes. And that will be an ASL3 class. And then if that goes well, then next summer we're hoping to add some core courses. ASL3 is a core course, but we'd like to add, say, freshman comp, history, government, some of those classes that deaf students around the state just haven't had the opportunity to get dual credit, and especially not in their language, and not with a deaf instructor. So that's our goal for that, and we're getting started this summer.
We're very excited about
that's
this.
Cool.
Because as we all know, our hearing students have lots of opportunity for dual credit, but our deaf and hard of hearing do not. And this has been a passion of ours for several years, and we're very thankful that we've had some foundations that have partnered with us to give us some seed money. And we're putting it together, and we're very hopeful, as Danny said, that this will be the beginning. Because, again, it's difficult. We've tried to do some things by distance, and it's worked. But we do think that having the students on campus and having the opportunity to learn in their language, that is going to be a game changer for some of these students, and so we want to have that happen. And then, as he mentioned too, we can expand the opportunity. You know, we have many students that are graduating, hearing students that are graduating with their associate degree from high schools. We don't have a lot, but we have a few, and we have several that are graduating with at least 12 or 15 hours. But your deaf and hard of hearing students do not necessarily get that opportunity, and so we feel compelled that's our role, and so we're working on it and trying to get it accomplished.
Is anybody else noticing that in all these programs, grants don't belong to be very successful lately in snagging grants?
Right.
I don't know if that's because we're trying for more of them, or because they're not out there, particularly to the public governments or whatever.
Sure.
What? But it seems like, so that's the lesson to be learned, all the campuses, that obviously this is a good moment for Howard College to go after grants.
Right, right. And I would say that it's probably a little bit of both. Some of the funds have been available through federal dollars, but a lot of it is just extra effort on a lot of people's parts to reach out. So we wanted you to see these people today. And there's some other, as we mentioned, Pam mentioned, we've got some others that were unable to come today. But some great things are going on.
Very good. All right. Okay, performers and measures outcomes.
Okay. So now we move into that section of the agenda. And you'll remember that we had shared with you back, I guess it was in November, that we came up with a calendar of when we would do certain things. And so this is the month to look at these particular performance measures outcomes. And so it's time to look at spring enrollment and contact hour report. I don't know if I'll open that up. We can, or yeah. But you have it in your board book, and so let me just talk about what we're seeing for spring enrollment. Spring enrollment is down. It's down 5% as far as the district as a whole. As always, though, it varies by the campus. And so what we're seeing, our Big Spring campus is relatively flat, five less students as compared to last spring. Our La Mesa campus was up a little bit, 5.88%, about six students. Our San Angelo campus is down about 12%, and that relates to some dual credit. And then and you can see, you know, we detail out where a lot the losses are by campus and what's going on. And you can see that we had a major loss in some of the dual credit offerings with San Angelo ISD. Big change there. And then our SWID campus is up 30%. We have an additional class made a difference there. And so then when everything is added together, then we did see a decrease in overall district enrollment for the spring enrollment this year, this semester. All right, so then when you look at contact hours, as you know, that's very important. Headcount is important, but so are the contact hours. And as always, it just depends on how the students are taking their classes. Sometimes our contact hours are not hit as much as it may seem that they could be with the enrollment. So sometimes our students are taking more hours. And so what we see on the Big Spring campus, again, flat, about a 2,000 2,000 difference in contact hours. Our La Mesa campus is up a little bit, about right at 350-something, about 5.25%. Our San Angelo campus is down. And that relates back to, but not, you'll notice, not as bad as we are in headcount. So we've got some students that are taking more hours, so our contact hours were not as down as much. So overall, our contact hours are 6.56% down. Now, doesn't matter because it, well, it always matters, but we're not in base year, so, but we are starting base year tomorrow. And so that becomes a very important topic. We talk about that a lot around here and try to plan around it. And so we're obviously watching all these numbers very, very carefully. So then when you, we also, Rebecca, she puts all this together so we can see how we're looking as far as our contact hours, our head count, and then also then we look at, so how does that look over 10 years? Well, we're down, and some of this relates to, and it's going to, what's going to happen, it's finally going to, we're going to get past the greatest increase that we ever had, and that was back in around the 2010, 2011, 2012 years, because that was when the Great Recession was going on. We had record enrollment, not only at Howard College, but all over the country. And so we're still, when you do comparative, we're still looking at that scenario. But you can see that overall, we do, if you look back, we did have, we do have a significant decrease in what you see relative to headcount and contact hours. But then if you look at what has happened over, you know, starting 2014 on, then it's not as significant. But we're, until we get past the comparative of the 2012 and 2013 year, we're going to see those kinds of dramatic numbers. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to build back up. We're still having the impact of COVID, and so we're trying to begin to be as normal as we possibly can. Speaking of normal, then, when you look at workforce training and what's going on there, again, we are seeing some improvement in that area for quarter one. And you can see that, surprisingly, already our FCI is going up dramatically. It's not where we want it to be yet, but we are coming out of that. So that is good as we move into base year starting March 1. On our Big Spring campus, you see that there was a decrease in both headcount and mainly headcount, not as much on course offerings and then also with contact hours. And that relates to the closure of the GEO prison because we were doing a lot of training for their employees, so we're having the impact of the private prison on that side. So we are trying to, all the things that we're talking about today, we're trying to be strategic and trying to address some of the things that are happening in our communities and moving forward as we come out of the pandemic. Does anybody have any questions about that? Pretty fast, but all right, Mr. Chairman.
Student success.
All right, and so now we're going to, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, for student success and community workforce development, Brian will come forward, and he will talk to us about what's happening with our leading indicators. So it's yours.
Thank you. Yeah, so again, from the procedural calendar, we want to talk about our some of our key performance indicators. Specifically focusing on our early momentum metric. This was kind of first designed through the Student Success Center of the Texas Association of Community Colleges through the Guided Pathways model. Using different data measures that give a quick indication of what we're doing is actually helping our students in a quick manner so we can make adjustments and look at our results sooner rather than waiting 2 or 3 years down the line. What we've been focusing on through this pathways model and through our developmental education is helping students get on a path. As you know, when students come to Howard College, they come in at all different levels. There are some students who come in who already take college-level courses, meaning that they're able to take courses without developmental education help, and they're not restricted in what they can do. A good portion of our students come in unprepared, meaning that they do need additional help while taking these courses. They're not considered ready to take a college-level math course, a college-level reading course, or a college-level writing course, or a mixture of those. So this could be a big deterrent for a lot of students as they come into the college. Years ago, when students come in, at least from my advising experience, they could have come in and needed 3 semesters of developmental education before they could take a college-level math or English course. Again, through that time and through that assessment, it could be it could take a long time for them to go through college, and a lot of them would fall off their pathway and not finish. So we've been focusing a lot through pathways and through our co-requisites to help students get through developmental faster. The co-requisite model has been pushed through a couple of years now. We've been modifying and tweaking our co-requisite model so where students don't have to take the developmental course and then they can take the college-level course once they pass it. They're now looking at taking courses concurrently. They're taking a co-requisite course with a college-level course simultaneously to be supported. So that way, you know, when they're taking that college math course, they have a developmental math course that's taken at the same time to help them through the parts that they may have difficulty. And again, this will reduce the amount of time that they are in developmental education. Again, we've been modifying this, changing this through the years, and changing the amount of co-requisites we've had. We've been moving from only needing having a small amount doing this to a good majority now taking co-requisite courses. So when we talk about these early momentum metrics, again, we're looking to see, are we helping these students get prepared faster for these courses? We're focusing the numbers that we're looking at today at our first-time students. These are students who have a high school diploma or GED equivalent and then are now taking college-level courses for the first time. So this does not include dual credit. Again, we're looking at the momentum metric. We're seeing if they're getting college courses hours. And we're also looking at, are they completing gateway courses? And then we also look at persistence momentum. Are they getting more and more hours and transitioning from semester to semester? That data is not completed yet because we are kind of in the middle of the fall and spring term. The data looking at today focuses on 3 years of these first-time students from fall 19 to fall 21. What we're looking for is, are they prepared? Meaning they are ready to take college-level courses. Are they unprepared? As you see through the years, as we've gone from 19 to 21, we've had more students come in unprepared rather than prepared. This has been a numerous kind of factors of, again, kind of dealing with COVID. Students have been able to not be able to take the college readiness test, so they kind of already start off in the unprepared pile. But again, that number has changed from fall 19 to 2021. The difference between male and female students during this time has not changed. And neither really has our ethnicity background. The main factor mostly being that students are less prepared coming to Howard College first time than previous years. Moving on to the 6-plus credits, again, what we're looking for is when students were taking developmental coursework, they were stuck taking courses that weren't applying to their program or their associate's degree, so forth. When we talk about that, it can be very defeating for students to not see those college credits build up. So we want to see students at least get 6-plus credits in their first semester. When we look at this by a year-end standpoint, or for that first semester, you can see there's really not too much change, but there is a growth in our unprepared students getting more college credits than previously, which, again, since they're making co-requisite model, they are taking more college-level courses. So that, I think that's why we're seeing the growth there. Our male students and then our students that are other, that don't fit within the other 3 ethnicities, have also seen a growth in the number of credits that have grown. Moving on to our completing math courses in the first semester. Again, what we really see here is data from fall 20, which was last year, and fall 21 this year. Our fall 19 data was not broken up by fall and spring, so that's why it's not included in this. But one thing you do see as we, again, as we've increased our co-requisite models, where students can take the college level math course sooner, we're seeing growth in students completing that fact, especially in the first term. You see that we have growth in the completed math, the unprepared, students that were prepared, and the male and the Hispanic and white population. So students, their first semester are completing their math course, at least their gateway math course, their first term. And again, with the co-requisite model, it allows the students to actually have the opportunity to take that course. When we look at it at a year standpoint for the math course, fall 19 is then added back in. Fall 21 is included in that data, but again, it's incomplete. We will see those results come from spring and summer. But you can already see the difference between fall 19 and fall 20. We are seeing more and more of those students get their math credit sooner. Again, back in our previous developmental ages days, students could take up to 3 semesters to get out of developmental education. Again, it varies by student. But again, since students can take a co-requisite, they're getting it done faster, and we're seeing that completion done. Moving on to English, we focus here on completing English 1301 because English 1301 requires you be ready in terms of readiness in reading and readiness in writing. Looking at that again, we look from the fall term, fall 20 and fall 21, we are seeing a difference in the number of students who are completing that. Again, we've increased the amount of co-requisites that are available for our students to take an English 1301 course and a developmental education course to help them be successful in that. Looking at the next slide, if you're looking at the year-end data, since fall 19 back in, again, you're seeing a big growth. Our prepared students seem to be doing really well. If they have that already, if they come in college ready. But we're also seeing growth in our unprepared students. And I, again, project that it'll be higher for our fall 21 once we have our complete data for the year. Next slide, again, focuses on both having completion of both math and English. Again, when a student graduates from Howard College with an associate's degree, they need to be completing these areas. Again, we've already seen growth in these areas based off of our co-requisite growth and the offers and availability for our students. That is also the case within the year one data, especially when you look at the fall 19 to fall 20. We are seeing these changes where students are completing, you know, and getting out of developmental education and being prepared for both math and English at the end of year one. So this is very exciting for us, the students who can get into these courses and complete their gateways have a better chance of continuing their education. You know, not feeling defeated by not completing developmental math education is, you know, it can be detrimental to students. So this assistance and this support really helps them keep moving forward. And so, is there any questions in terms of performance indicators and student successes?
It seems like not that good. Students have a hard time getting by in math. High school level, it doesn't force them to do that. But is it taking longer to do development courses?
Again, that's why the co-requisites were really put in, because years when they would come in and they were not considered college ready, they could spend 1 to 3 semesters before they could even take a college level course. Now that we've reduced the amount of college developmental courses and increased the co-requisite, you know, we're seeing that, okay, they're not considered ready, but since they're in that college level course and they have a secondary course that's focused on making sure that they're successful when they're not, when they need it, it seems to be a better fit. And so I really, you know, and plus things have changed with COVID and with, you know, testing, college ready testing. It could be a number of reasons why students are more unprepared, but I think it's really promising to see that more students are becoming. All right. Can I move on to the MZ Labor Report?
Yes, sir.
Yes, please.
Moving on to the MZ Labor Report, again, I spoke about this a couple board meetings ago, MD being something that we have received through a Title V grant, economic modeling system. What's really great about MD is it provides numerous data points for us to look at. I think last time I mentioned that MD joined with Burning Glass, which is another modeling system. I wanted to follow up with changes that we've been seeing from the last time I spoke to y'all guys to this time, talking about our service area, some economic overview, and the labor market demand that has kind of changed a little bit since the last time. So it's kind of a good way to indicate what's kind of occurring in our area. We've talked a lot today about grants and different opportunities. This helps reinforce that kind of information. The educational attainment, I just wanted to include on that on the next page. You know, when we look at our area in our 13 counties, we are below the margin of how many people have associates or bachelor's degrees in particular areas with again, we the lower area of students who don't have these types of credentials. When we look at the places of work within our residents, again, what we kind of see within that map there is that within our 13 counties, a lot of our people who work with or live in our counties actually leave our counties to work elsewhere. So except for a few, but you can see that most people are actually driving off and working in different areas and then coming back into our county. So again, you know, there's potential for growth in both of these areas. The next slide is focusing on the projections of the next 10 years for different post-secondary awards for our area. A lot of this, it was interesting to see from the last time I reported this, but this time that there's changes. There's a total of 6 new different ones, professions on this list compared to 1 3 months ago. So our area is kind of seeing some fluctuation. What's the benefit about this, though, is that when you look at this model, we are counting at least 8 to 9 of these areas how our college has a hand. You know, we are, you know, with heavy truck drivers, we participate in continuing education, CDL. Medical assistance, we have a program like that in Angela. So a lot of these different areas, we are contributing. And I think that's great that we're showing that we are in tune with what the demand is looking like for the 10 years in terms of the post-secondary and associate awards. The next slide, again, focuses on our bachelor programs needed within our 13 counties. Again, I think Dr. Sparks talked about this as we broker to these four-year universities and prepare these students to go from here to a four-year school. And then looking at these degrees, again, you do see a lot where Howard College can play a hand in helping these students be prepared and move on. This hasn't fluctuated too much compared to what we saw about three months ago. Just the inclusion of teachers and instructors, which again, you know, Howard College has played a role in helping students get that path of becoming a teacher through like our technique program. And that's all I have for y'all guys today.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, our next agenda item is Performance Excellence Quarterly Investment Report.
Yes, sir. You have, as a part of your packet, you have the Quarterly Investment Report, and Brenda and Steve are here to answer any questions you might have. If not, you'll need to approve it.
Any questions?
Comments? I need a motion to approve the audit. I have a second.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. The final audit report.
Again, this is just as a part of your packet. As you know, Dan presented at the last meeting, and we were just in final draft form at that point, but we wanted to get it in front of you. But anyway, I just wanted to make this official. This is the final document. It didn't change, but now you have it where it doesn't say draft on it. So,
thank you. Okay, monitoring, purchasing.
All right. And so as we move into this next section, as you all know, we have moved forward with our student information system and the implementation of CAM. And as that begins to unfold, we have to, as far as some servers, we mentioned that at the last meeting, you gave us the authority to keep working on that. We didn't know for sure exactly what that price was going to be. And so we literally just got some of this information on Friday, so we're bringing it back to you. And it is, I know that Eric has worked on this with the company, as well as Renee, who's not here, to get the information that we needed. Steve's been involved in that. And so, Steve, is there anything you would want to say particularly about it?
It's on two interlocal different contracts. It's on a TIPS contract and a DIR, which is the state of Texas, on two different quotes. And that's about it. I mean, it's all under an interlocal, so we don't have to do bid.
Yeah, it's basically been bid. Yeah. And so with your, again, you'd already given authority, but I just, again, because we were having a board meeting, we just brought it back. So if you want to
get a motion to approve the services. Have a motion to have a second. Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank
Eric,
you, Steve.
As far as delivery on these, they basically are still?
They said some of it was 2 to 4 weeks. It's not months. It sounded more like a week timeline.
Okay.
So.
Great. We weren't sure how fast things were going to be, so we were still getting that information.
Okay. Transcript services.
We're bringing that to you. This is the difference. It's a little odd. We're bringing it to you. There's no dollar value on it at this point. We sent it out to two different – we sent it to National Student Clearinghouse and to Parchment, and it came back. The only one we received, the RFP response we received, was to National Student Clearinghouse. It's a pass-through fee. To students, we did it because of the value that was involved, not to shut somebody out that wanted to be in on it. The student will pay for their transcript and we pass through the transcript to National Clearing House. It will involve an amount with us of, as revenue if they determine to charge more of a fee than what we pay. And so we could generate revenue off of it, and that will be done through the catalog change upcoming.
Okay. Have a motion to approve the transcript services.
Motion.
Have a motion to have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Thank you. SWID Seal Coat Project.
Right. You do not have anything to approve today. This is more of a FYI that it's coming, and so you know it's out there. Fabian has been working with the city. Fabian, you just want to give a quick update of where we are on the SWID Seal Coat?
So the city officials have gone out and assessed our parking lot, our SWID parking lot, the street, and they released the RFP yesterday, was a week ago. So we're going to be working on the interlocal agreement with the city of Big Spring. And in the meantime, well, this project won't be able to happen until like August or so, the hottest part of the summer, the seal coat, everything. But in the meantime, we'll be prepping our streets and our parking lots to get everything ready for August.
And this was budgeted last summer. And again, it's a part of our deferred maintenance plan. We wanted to be able to go out with the city. We've done this before when we worked with the city on an interlocal because obviously they do so much paving that it helps us get a better price. And so there will be, as Fabian mentioned, there will be an interlocal that will be prepared after everything is finished, and then we'll bring it back to you all for approval. Just wanted you to know, give you a quick update on it.
Okay.
Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you. All right. Handbook catalog changes.
All right. The only one that we have is going to be relative to installment contracts for the payment of tuition and fees and room and board, and we just needed some updating on that.
Okay.
Need that to be approved.
Have a motion to approve.
I move.
Have a motion to have a second.
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Catalog renovation projects.
Okay.
Much of them.
Yes, we do. Okay, so our roofing project, and as always, Terry has prepared the roofing roofing update. Terry, do you want to just come forward and be ready to kind of answer any questions if they have any about the report? I think everybody knows that we had a little bit of a, or we, I shared that we had a little rain issue, but it's being repaired.
The roofing project is progressing. We did have a rain event on the 16th of this month, and caught us a little bit off guard. There was no rain predicted until that morning of the 16th. On the 15th, there was no rain predicted, and it caught us off guard. Between the roofing company, AeroCos Maintenance, Max Fabian and his guys, and then a service master that came from Abilene, we've been working very hard to get everything dried out, and we're hopeful that in Vernon. We're hopeful that all the drying equipment can be removed today. I think they've probably been over there. Were they over there around lunch?
Yes.
Just okay. Anyway, once all the drying equipment is removed, we'll give the air in the building a couple of days to settle down. We'll come in and do air monitoring to make sure that there's nothing nasty hanging around in here, in there, and then with all the ceiling tile has already been replaced, or almost all of it. There's some cove base, a little painting, and some other touch-up that will have to be done. Moving furniture back into place. It's probably just, in some respects, just a hazard of roofing. These things happen. We dealt with it. Project, if you read the report, is moving along. We're hoping to be through in April. That will be, we'll have to wait and see, but there's still quite a bit to do. So, anything else?
I might just add, as far as the rain event, WCR's insurance company is covering that.
Yeah,
and
there's
so,
no cost to Howard.
Yeah, there's no cost to us. And so we're moving right along. So to Terry's point then, moving to as far as the roofing project at the last board meeting, we talked to you about the update on, as far as change order 5. We were ready to go forward with that. You gave us the authority. We brought a number to you, and you gave authority up to $198.50, I believe it was. To be able to go ahead and approve that and keep things moving on that. And some of that related to what we call hailstorm number 3. And so that was a part of last month's meeting. At the same time, we had talked a little bit about our claim and how we were going forward with that. You gave us authority to go forward and actually explore what else we would need to do relative to the Coliseum and some other areas. And so Terry and Vernon and Phil have been working on that with WCR to get some numbers. And so what you have in your packet, we had divided it up, the project, which was the first one, change order 5, that actually came back a little less. But Vernon, in his efforts working with the company, felt like there were a few things that he recommended that we change up a little bit, so that added a little bit of cost based on what he felt was best. And so it's still right at, though, he thinks that when it's all said and done, it'll be around the $200,000 mark. That's change order 5. Now, change order 6, then, that then begins, that goes to the Coliseum, the lower roof, as well as looking at, there was some things at the security building, the Partee and Turner Residence Hall that needed to be addressed as well. And so we do have the prices back on that. As I mentioned, all of that together change order 6 would be an additional $661,136 that relates to the Coliseum lower roof to repair that roof. And then the security building is right at $31,000, Partee Residence Hall $30,580, and the Turner Residence Hall $27,522. Now we just got this information like on Thursday night, Friday, and so we're still working through looking at some of those numbers. Vernon and Phil and Terry and I met on Friday morning. Vernon does feel like that these are good numbers, and as far as being able to go ahead and recommend that we go forward, Brenda has been keeping as far as the and shared that information with you as far as the spreadsheet on what's left, what's available, you know, in the and the money that we have available to do the project that we need to do, and we do have the money. Brenda and I visited about it on Saturday and agree that we think our numbers are good, and so we still, again, there'll be some conversation that will continue with WCR, but with you approving us to go ahead and go forward with this change order 6, then they can go ahead and they can order the material, and because material is hard to get right now, prices don't hold for very long, and so we want to keep moving forward if you're comfortable doing that. Now, I rattled off a bunch real quick, and Vernon and Terry may want to add to that.
Well, I don't know. Vernon, do you want to?
Great, Clay. Thank y'all for hearing us today. Thank you. Project is going very well. As Dr. Sparks and Terry said, the contractor fell a little bit short on Horace Garrett. That's being taken care of. That will be resolved in just a couple of days. The change orders are they're good numbers. If we were to put this project, separate that as a separate project, put that out for bid, we believe the numbers will be significantly higher and the project will be delayed significantly. Materials, especially roof insulation, has got a serious delay factor. Right now, we believe that the materials, if ordered this week, based on y'all's actions, if y'all were to approve it today, based on those actions, we think that we could have those materials in here within about 60 days. If we don't, if it delays much, there's not really much telling what kind of time frame, because the supply chain is just, it's broken. It literally is, and we like, when we get an opportunity to take advantage, we try and jump. So that's our recommendation to y'all that approve going forward with this, because I think it's going to take care of the Coliseum for many, many years into the future and a few other smaller issues, and not campus won't have, our college won't have to look back over their shoulders much down the line.
Great.
I remind everybody, change order 5 was Coliseum, basically the metal. And so with change order 6, and we're, as Vernon is sharing, that starts taking care of the Coliseum and getting it in good shape.
Okay. Very good. Any more questions? Entertain a motion to approve order change order 5 and 6. I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
No opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Terry.
Doing all that. Okay.
Student Information Systems Project Implementation Update.
All right. As we shared when we moved on with our TIMS thesis project, we were going to give you an update at the different board meetings. And so Eric and Amy, they're both just dying.
I said he's doing it.
Yeah. So anyway, so all right, Eric. And all right. So give the board a quick update on where we are.
That's really true. You're doing
Now, like we mentioned earlier, we're working on the server purchases. The company that we're working with is really good, and they've set up a kind of a cloud version for us to get started with. And so right now we're working on the data migration, so we're working on data exports, and we'll move into data mapping where we're mapping our data to the new database scheme. And then the biggest update, I think, probably other than that, is that we have a meeting set on March 7th. They're coming on site, and they're calling it a lifecycle meeting, and he wants to walk us through the lifecycle of a student and their product, and then he wants to learn about how we process students here so that he can help, you know, we can kind of move our information to the correct spots in their database. And so, and then part of that is me and Amy, and then I think we're using kind of our departmental heads as power users, and then once we get into training, we'll start including more users.
Yeah, this Monday will probably be our kickoff, kickoff meeting. And you know, we're excited, long time we've been talking about this, so we're really excited. But I don't even ask me any questions on what he just said. I don't know any of that. What I do know is, you know, your student information system, it's the backbone. I mean, it's the, what's, it's your, you know, the way you register, financial aid, you know, process, everything. So I'm hoping we will take this opportunity to evaluate our processes and hopefully avoid that efficiency just because of the nature of the upgraded system and the technology involved. But also, it's good to have those hard debates on how we need to do things moving forward. So our staff, I wish they need a pause in, but the power users, we call them, are doing meals. Mr. Tennille Richardson is our registrar. Candice Maldonado, financial aid. Marcus Patrick, head of the student accounting. Rebecca Villanueva, the Brimlaw report. Now those, and I know I'm missing someone else. Those are the, that lead those departments that have to, basically it will be a train the trainer once we start this. A lot of extra hours will be time above what they're already busy scheduled. But we try to feed them well and make it fun throughout the process. And yeah, don't ask me those questions. That's why we have to team it, because yeah, I like the food and fun, and he likes the technology. So we make it.
That's right.
But the company that's doing the migration and the transfers, they're really good, and they've told me that it's kind of a third party, but they've built their business around supporting this product. And they told me that the guy that's doing our implementation is the financial aid expert. And so we do a lot of financial aid with grants, obviously, and beyond. And they're like nose to the grindstone. And so we feel really confident about, you know, the direction that they're taking.
Yeah, and you texted the other day that we had our first transfer of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had been getting ready to do, and we had started the data mapping with the previous system, and so we had a lot of the data exports ready to go, and so they were itching to get started. So we have a full set of data sent to them already. So they're kind of combing through it to kind of do some preliminary things.
And not that Eric's not doing work, so I don't know what he does, but I will say that behind the scenes, it's a lot that goes on. So with Eric and our IT group,
yes,
it's just a lot of work, and how long we've had toys, there's a lot of data that needs to be deleted, but you have to really dig into it to know what to keep and what not to keep. So it's a lot of work on their side too, Eric.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Moving right along. Okay.
All right. Our next agenda item is the President's Report.
All right.
Go ahead and take us through recognitions also.
Yes, sir. I'll take us all the way through. And I just wanted to make the comment. I was looking around the room, and I think that you've been introduced to everybody except Monica. And so
I saw her sitting over there.
Yeah. And Monica's over our La Mesa campus, and so I just wanted y'all to know Monica. All right. So as far as upcoming activities, you have your calendar, and I, as I always say, we have a lot going on this time of year with athletic events, and so those are listed for you, but trying to just hit some of the high points of some things, and we've mentioned some of the things that are going to happen already, like our CAMS kickoff and what will be happening at ASU tomorrow. But on the 8th, we're going to have our spring Phi Theta Kappa Awards induction convocation for our students on the San Angelo campus. So that's going to happen that day. We have our San Angelo Foundation meeting the next day, and then we have a GED ceremony on Thursday night in San Angelo. So we have a lot of special things going on next week on our San Angelo campus. The spring break is scheduled the week of the 14th through the 18th. You see, though, that there are some things still going on. And then just moving you back to your next board meeting will be on the 28th of March, and so we will work towards getting other things accomplished for you. And I won't go past that. There are other things that we shared, but we'll wait and talk about those at the next meeting. So that's your activities that are up and coming. As far as recognitions, we have several that I'd like to bring up today. We have one special one that we'll have to wait till March, but it's a teaser. But we were hoping we could maybe share that today, but we can't. We have to wait on an embargo to be lifted on a press release. But we can share that we have our choir student, Joseph Fierro, freshman voice major. He performed with Allstate 2-year College Choral Directors Association Allstate Choir 2 weeks ago, and everything went really well, and so we're very proud of Joseph. We also are proud of the fact, and you saw it in your board book, our LaMisa students, they participated in the LaMisa Christmas Parade, and they got first place, and we're very proud of that. We talked about that the other night at the LaMisa Student Roundtable. So we shared. I want to share some of those pictures. Again, we're trying to make efforts in every community that we're in to have a big impact, a big involvement, and those students, that's our SGA, and they work to do that. You also have a new one that we shared this morning, and that is that our theater students, some of you may have had the opportunity to go watch the play that we were taking to festival, and it was a roaring success. The students did great. They got an excellent rating on the play. We have Orlando Martinez got excellent rating in acting, Respondent's Choice. Jonathan Costanon, Respondent's Choice, superior rating acting. Precious Sheridan, Respondent's Choice, superior rating in acting. Precious also got the Professor's Choice on Best Performance. Andre Wright, audience favorite, best performance. April, our director, Respondent's Choice, superior rating on costume design, and also superior rating on set design. So we had a very successful event or showing at the theater festival, so we're very, very proud of them. And then I wanted to also let you be aware of the fact that Jay Crowder, one of our, everybody remembers Jay, he was on the team that went to the national tournament when we won the Nationals, and Jay is being inducted into the National Junior College Athletic Association Hall of Fame, and there'll be more on that in days ahead, but we wanted to go ahead and share that, and we'll share more when we have that information, additional information. But also, I'm sorry, Phoenix, he's playing for Phoenix Suns. Phoenix Suns, yeah. Yes, yes. It's fun to watch him and see him and, you know, and remember that he was here. Yeah, he was here. A fine young man as a student here. Also, when you say something about Jay, it's hard not to say something about Mark Adams, because Mark was the coach for that team, and we're very proud that Mark is having great success at Texas Tech. We know that they're having a great run, and didn't like the way the game turned out the other day. But other than that, everything has been going great for the Texas Tech Raiders, and so we're proud for Mark Adams. And there's even some discussion about him getting some national awards. We'll see how everything all plays out. But his defense that he used here at Howard College, he's taken it to Texas Tech, and it's going great. Finally, I believe that's all that I have. I'll have some other recognitions next month. On Board Education and Development, as far as legislative, the commission continues as far as we're having those meetings. Right now what they're doing, they are having smaller focus group meetings, and the commission itself will be coming back together next month. The association, Texas Association, has come up with what our goals are as far as what we would like to see happen, and I didn't share them this time because we're still doing a little bit of, I guess you'd say, wordsmithing on them. But by next meeting, we'll have that information. But basically, our goal is increased funding for community colleges, and we believe that we can show why that's important. So we're continuing to work with that commission, and I'll keep you informed as we move along. All right, that's all I have.
Well, I don't have really anything to add. Quite a meeting. Very good. Glad you're all here. Appreciate you coming. And by the authority granted by the governor of Texas, this meeting is adjourned.
Okay. Thank you very much. Adrian, we're going to hang up on you unless you just want to keep listening as you're driving down the road. He's gone.
He didn't waste any time leaving.
You're going to be an ill
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.